Okay, welcome back. One and all, vaxxed and unvaxxed, you are all deeply appreciated and cared about, and we do our best here to give you the options with regard to these horrible, hideous injections that have nothing to do with vaccinating anybody against anything. We try to give you choices. Choices. I remember when my daughter was growing up, I would never discipline her in the traditional sense of the word. I would always give her choices. I said, you've made a decision to do this. You're going to have three options to make this better or to rectify it somehow. And each one I tried to make so there would be some learning involved. And just kids, you know, everybody's got their own style. But we're trying to give you as many options as we can to make the best decisions considering whatever texture and configuration you're in now regarding the shots and shedding that you can make. We want you to succeed. And I think all of you know that. A few may miss the point, but we never, ever tell anyone what to do. And you could not find, and I'm saying this in all sincerity, you couldn't find any two people anywhere who care more about this than we do. And I think most of you realize that. We're not here to play games. We're not here to play green screen games, and this is deadly serious stuff. And we're on the outside, but we've done, especially the heart and soul of this effort is dedication. We've tried our best to make sure we have the best information to give you, and I'll stop there. Are you there, partner? I'm not hearing you.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
can
now
you hear me
I hear
now?
You. Yeah.
Okay. Happy Monday.
Well, that's a good start. Okay, I'll take it. Yes, happy Monday. Wow. It's getting to the point now where the texture of the information that we're gathering and seeing and being exposed to is changing. There are changes now. We're moving into a different, like, let's say it's a three-act play. We're moving into act two now, very definitely. Things have changed, and they are showing up more in these social media boards that Erica monitors. What would you say are the biggest changes that we're seeing?
I think in some of the injury support groups, there's feelings of despair. You know, it's gone from, I think, hopefulness that right. You know, they could band together and somehow come up with a solution or treatment for their injuries.
Yeah, detoxing, new supplements, whatever.
Well, that doesn't pertain so much to the vax, but you know, that's more the people who have been victimized by shedding. But the right. people who have been seriously injured that are to the point of needing a support group because they are not getting support anywhere else.
They have no one to talk to. Nobody.
Those who have been able to obtain, you know, traditional allopathic care, it's not really delivering. You know, their symptoms are managed if they're lucky. Many of these people with the neurological symptoms are still really struggling to find some kind of protocol that will work. A pattern I am seeing, and it's hard to know how to interpret this just yet. There have been people that left these groups believing that they were on the mend some time ago, and now they are coming back with the same symptoms they had and more. Now, there was some talk of, you know, is this still the sequelae of the original injury, or mm-hmm. now that they're giving out this new shot, are they suffering the effects of shedding? And these people who are vax injured do know and are very quite aware that there is shedding that's happening because they get around some people and they have exacerbation of their symptoms. So there are some that really cannot go to crowded places or they'll pay the price.
Very good. Go to guests and look under our names, if you would. There are a couple of things we want to refer to and guide you through that are important. It's again an area that is constantly changing, and we're trying to track it for you, and it's not easy to do. And the changes Erica just alluded to, yes, and there are other things happening as well. There are just more and more people being stricken. And the sad thing is, though, to see these reports coming in, and we talk about them off air a lot, people have, as I mentioned, they have nobody. Their families turned against them. Their spouses have turned against them. Their children don't want to hear about their injuries and ailments and pain anymore. Their doctor is getting tired of it, I'm sure, because they keep running back to the doctor hoping and praying for some kind of relief, and they can't get it. Especially people with headaches. That seems to be one of the more, and tinnitus. Those are, you know, not sounding like they're necessarily instantly catastrophic, but they are horrific to try to live with. Body pains, body aches, joint aches, pain all the time. Not a joke. Not fun. Not at all.
Yeah, it does seem as though more and more of these people are complaining of head pressure. Just unrelenting, intractable head pressure.
That's it. That's a new trend I've noticed, too. Yeah.
I suppose it's not surprising at this stage, because we know the spike gets into the brain and causes inflammation and clotting at the same time. And then the what's known as the glymphatic system of the brain is, in a sense, plugged. The brain is supposed to shrink at night while you sleep, and the fluid in the brain is supposed to drain through this glymphatic system, which is in and around the jaw, the base of the skull, and it's supposed to be swept away. And evidently, that is not happening in these people. Their skulls are becoming like a pressure cooker. And I think a lot of these people have probably this undiagnosed intracranial hypertension. And as we heard Nurse Ann say, that they've had a few cases now of these brain herniations where the pressure builds up so much that part of the brain actually comes oozing out of the skull. So if that's not addressed, that can be very quickly life-threatening.
Tell our listeners, oh yes, it doesn't mean it comes through your ears or the ears. It means it generally goes down the top of the spinal column. Mm-hmm. That's where it presses into, and the pain must be intolerable. I can't even imagine it. Constant.
Yeah, a couple of these people this past week were really just at their wit's end, you know, almost, I would say, suicidal. They go to bed at night if they can sleep, and they pray they don't wake up.
That's true. That's a verbatim quote, too. People do. They
yeah,
like that.
Suicide is talked about a lot. Yeah. And the thing is that they have been shunned at this point by their families and friends in many cases, because a lot of these injuries are not visible on the exterior. They think they're making them up. They think they're complaining, being needy.
And they tend not to
talk about it.
They're hurting even worse than they could describe. They know that they're constantly bitching about how bad they feel. They know, but it's often worse than that. And they have nowhere to go. That's why these groups are so full of posts from people that are heartrending. They're awful. These people have nobody. Anyhow, you're all welcome here. You know that. So
it's very sad to see. I mean, you're really seeing the ugly side of humanity in some instances.
I couldn't agree more. All right, go to Jeff and Erica and guests. Look under our names. First up, microclotting in most everyone now. Microclots. You know about microclots. You know what they are. We're seeing more evidence now that microclotting is unquestionably appearing in many of the unvaxxed. We don't know how many. We don't have a percentage, but it's there. And we're getting stories about that. So take a look at what we have for you here. It's a microclot grading information sheet from Dr. Jordan Vaughn. He has a clinic. All right? And what if you look, there, for those of you who can't see, there are 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18 boxes in rows of six and rows of five, 15. And they're showing in green the sort of luminescing microclots in the blood. And this is very serious stuff. Let me just read this underneath and Erica can explain it all. We are, here's the title. What exactly is microscopic microclot testing and what does it mean? We are fortunate to be able to work with global experts who have studied and tested all of this in long COVID patients. The process involves taking a sample of your blood and spinning it down to separate the whole blood, the cells, from your platelet-poor plasma. Your platelet-derived, you don't have the proper platelet amount in your plasma. It's called PPP. We then draw off the plasma, mix it with a special type of stain, and examine it under microscope with an immunofluorescent light. It makes it glow green. Since this plasma has been cleared of platelets, those things in your body that normally form clots, theoretically, there should be no visible clots. So these people who are platelet poor should not be able to be manifesting clots, all right? But they are. Again, theoretically, there should be no visible clots. What we and our colleagues have found in long COVID patients are abnormal clot formations in PPP that light up under our microscope as you see pictured above. This is confirmation of microclots in your body, which deposit in all of your tissues and lead to long COVID symptoms. Elimination of these microclots are the target of our treatment plan for you. Please note that this is not a validated laboratory test in the U.S. at this time. We are working with our global partners and using their validated grading system as you see above. You will periodically receive pictures of your microclots during your treatment, along with our subjective grade based on the scale above. We will monitor for clearance of these microclots microscopically as you progress. Okay, so these are samples of microclots in the blood and in all tissues of the body. They're everywhere. Everywhere the blood glows, it glows like these green, but everywhere the blood travels and transits are microclots. They're forming in every organ, every tissue in your body. And that's not good. These are microclots. What is to stop them, Erica, from going macro and growing out of control if left alone?
No, it will. It will progress. You know, this is a form of amyloidosis. And they're not resistant to fibrinolysis, the enzymes that would normally break these things down. And so quite often, and as you'll hear Pierre Corey say, that in severe cases, sometimes the D-dimer, which measures the breakdown of clots, is negative. So you could be fooled into thinking that you don't have this clotting going on. Well, it's a different type of clotting. This is a protein type of clot.
Amyloid clots. These are microclots again.
Aggregated proteins.
Right. These are proteinaceous clots, amyloids, and they're growing.
And the spike is the seed for that.
You can see them in these pictures. The spike starts them off, and here they grow and glow. They're right there. That's somebody who enrolled for their particular treatment protocol and who shows up with PPP, platelet-poor plasma. You don't have enough platelets.
Well, no, when they get the blood sample, they remove the platelets.
They're taken out, so there shouldn't be any clotting. And yet there's still clotting showing in the samples.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's what we're looking at here. So can you imagine the first time when they got to the point of becoming aware of where these clots came from? Not normal platelet clots. These are amyloid clots, and they're everywhere. protein clots, and they will not respond to, what is it,
Eliquis. Well, the treatment, the way they are treating this through the conventional medical care, allopathic care, is through with this triple therapy. And it's aspirin, it's Plavix, clopidogrel, and Eliquis. So, and then sometimes they'll put natokinase along with it. And that's a pretty potent combination of drugs. It's attacking or addressing the clotting cascade from multiple points. And the people I know who have been on this, been treated for it, they notice a difference almost immediately. And, you know, they have results as long as they stay on it, and they do have some improvement. One person I know had a pretty much a grade 4 when he started on the therapy, and after 3 months got it down to maybe a 1.5 to 2. So there was some improvement, but it didn't totally eliminate them. You know, the benefit seems to be that it prevents it from progressing to some extent, because this microclotting will do a lot of damage. To the organs and tissues. They're not receiving an oxygen supply.
These are in your brain, in your heart, everywhere, okay?
At the capillary level, that's the problem.
And they're just baby clots. They're micro.
Right.
And they'll go macro, no question. So this is very dangerous stuff. So, the platelets are removed from the sample. They put stain in there. And what do they see? Amyloid proteinaceous clotting all over the place.
Now, Arne Burkhardt had these analyzed at some point, I think in 2022, was it? And determined that most of it was material from the endothelium. So what's happening is the endothelium, the lining of the blood vessels, is becoming degraded and sloughing off.
Right.
And becoming material that aggregates like this in the bloodstream as a result of the damage that the spike is causing, the extreme inflammatory reaction, all the acute phase proteins that are present in the blood in that type of situation, with or without platelets. I mean, usually you need platelets to start a clotting process.
Any clotting, yes, of course. This is they do repeat here. Please note that this is not a validated laboratory test in the U.S. at this time. So what we're seeing here is not a normally available, in fact, it's only available at their clinic, apparently.
I've heard there's three in this country right now. Well, I think the other one, or one of the other ones, is at Sloan Kettering. And I don't know where the third one is, but that's my understanding. It's not readily available, but if you could call this clinic of Jordan Vaughn's, MedHelp, it's in Birmingham, Alabama, and if you wanted to find out about how to get this test done.
So they'll.
I don't know if you have to go through a physician, probably.
Yeah, you have to get your blood drawn, then it would be sent into this laboratory, and it would be sent. The results would be sent to Vaughn and his people. Then you'd work with them. That's how it would work. So you cannot find out if you have microclots in your body easily at all. It's virtually impossible for the masses. It's just tough. We're just telling you.
Well, I think the next best thing is a live blood analysis. And you know, don't let these people tell you that these ribbons are graphene.
Oh, that's
not.
Very dangerous. The people running these live blood analyses are often not truly qualified when they start pointing at things and saying nano this, nano that.
Right.
They're not. You got to be real careful, really careful. If they can identify an amyloid clot by staining it in your live blood analysis, good luck. I hope that happens. I don't know that it is. I don't know that they're that qualified. I just don't.
Well,
know.
Again, we are seeing the aggregation, the rouleau formation of the red blood cells and a lot of other debris in some of these live blood samples. And the blood just looks terrible.
Microclots per se, though, is another story. How are these live blood analysts going to identify microclots?
Well, I think when you're seeing these ribbon-like strands, you're looking at endothelial
from micro,
sloughing.
Right. And something and going from micro to macro. They could be larger micro, but you're not going to see them at the capillary level necessarily. It's difficult. Okay, so that's hopefully helpful to some of you. The big story here is they're calling this long COVID, suggestive of people who have had the virus and are suffering from long after effects, when in reality, most of them have had the vax or vaxes and are suffering from the long-term injuries, which amyloidosis is certainly one of them, of the vaccines. And the other side of that coin is, what about the unvaxxed who are trying to stay relatively free of having to do and hang around with and be exposed to that which the vaxxed are giving off, the shedding? So it's a very complex issue. But long COVID is not just being shed upon, although that certainly can cause, I think, a trigger to occur and the symptoms would follow. Long COVID, how do you define it at this point? Who is it applying to, and what are the basic qualifications to suffer from long COVID? What do you have to have done?
Well, we have to go back to the beginning when, the people that did contract the virus, 30% of them had trouble getting over it. A lot of trouble getting over it. And quite often, their blood was having this microclotting. I mean, pretty much across the board, they think that is the main feature of long COVID, because you've got even if you've cleared the virus, an active infection, you still have viral debris to deal with, and the spike can persist for a long time. Because what happens when it gets into a cell, it just kind of stays there and causes that cell to become senescent, where it's neither dead nor alive, but it is inflammatory. And at the same time, it causes syncytia, which means it kind of melds with the other cells around it. And the immune system can't really see it, so it sits there and just creates inflammation. It's a senescent cell, and there's ways to get rid of that. But again, you probably want to be a little bit careful, because when you're mobilizing this stuff, it's still biologically active. It can go on to just migrate into other cells. So there are several protocols out there now. We posted a couple of them as to how to go about removing these things safely, because they can damage the kidneys on the way out.
Sure.
And again, we have the concern of, when we're taking things that break apart the spike, knowing now that it's full of at least 7 amyloidogenic sequences, do we really want to be breaking it down into these, amyloidogenic sequences? Is it better to keep it intact? So we have a lot of unknowns, but what we do know is that some of these protocols are working, at least symptomatically, for a lot of people. Their symptoms improve, and many of their inflammatory markers improve. But if you're constantly getting dosed with this stuff, it's just an uphill battle.
I've always been amazed at people unable or unwilling to understand that if they are around the vax, no matter how many times we mention this, they're getting shed upon, and they're uptaking that shedding material, whatever it is, spike, DNA, plasmids, maybe, LNP, maybe, mRNA, maybe all of the above. If you get in front of somebody who just let out a huge cough, people are shedding this stuff, lots of it. And we also know now that long COVID actually does apply to a lot of people, maybe symptom-free, but that paper that came out recently, a month ago, where it said that you get past the virus and you think you're over it, but you're not. It's continuing to do things sub-symptomatically in your body for a long time.
Subclinically, yeah. Well, we had that other study, too, that showed the brain of people who have had the infection, in even mild infections, where it was nothing more than what you would call a cold, there are discernible changes in the brain on an MRI. You can actually see areas that, I don't know if it's permanent, but there were changes. Does it resolve? I don't know, but
You said
so. It is, a neurotropic virus in that regard. It can affect your neurology, your central nervous system, and your brain.
I've always been amazed at how the human body reminds me of an organized nation state. Think of the arteries and veins. Think of the veins as being highways and the capillaries as being a little alley behind your house. They're all moving things. Trucks, cars, people, buses, heavy equipment, farm produce. And it's like a human body. Think about it, how it's transited around. All this material through veins and capillaries and arteries. I've always been interested in that analogy. You said something interesting about senescent cells, neither dead nor alive, but causing inflammation. Sounds like you're describing Generation Z and millennials to a large degree.
I suppose. So the issue with senescent cells, though, again, that's a cell that it's there, but it's not really functioning. It hasn't died, but it's pumping out all kinds of inflammatory signals. And one senescent cell can have an impact on, I think it was 350 other cells, just by its mere presence.
Sounds like a millennial with a cell phone to me. You get the analogy here?
So, you know, and as people age, you know, one of the things that causes senescence is the shortening of their telomeres. So the cell can't divide anymore, so it doesn't die. And so there are ways of getting rid of that. Some of these polyphenols, plant-based products, can actually help the body get rid of these senescent cells, and you should, whether you've got spike or not.
I want to make a quick note here. Dr. Lorraine Day has been a friend of mine for 30 years. Lorraine Day is apparently fighting for her life now. She had a serious health episode of some kind. She is at home. She is in and out of consciousness. That is what I was told this morning. I was given a note directly from Rockford Press, which is her book publisher and DVD publisher. And I just want to send along my good wishes to Lorraine. Hopefully she can somehow get past this. Okay. Here's our video format for tonight. FLCC, the weekly update of November 1st with Pierre Corey. We're going to go with Pierre right away. And we played some last Friday. We're going to play some more right now. So let's just kind of jump in here and see where we are. 50. Okay, here we go.
Second is, you have to be, I think, even more particularly sensitive, is my guess.
We have someone, Von Sweeney says, can you get shedding from a non-vaccinated massage therapist who has vaccinated clients as well?
I think it's a different form of is secondary shedding happening. So I think theoretically, yes. I don't think it would be that common, but we've seen phenomenon that suggests that could be a possibility.
A lot of people want to know.
Don't you think he's being very polite there and diplomatic? And we know that secondhand shedding has happened. It's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're going into a hands-on therapy situation, you really need to be aware of the fact that it is certainly within the realm of easy possibility that you're going to receive material, even if your provider is not injected. Okay.
From a vaccinated man affect an unvaccinated woman?
So after, how do I want to talk about this?
Frankly, like Dr. Ruth.
Well, yeah, frankly, like Dr. Ruth, there have been instances of acute symptoms after sexual intercourse. I describe a couple of them in my series. I put that beyond a paywall. I don't know why. I do know why. I just sort of didn't want to sort of muddy the conversation. But I think theoretically that can happen. And then, you know, we also have data. And this is, again, not from like the clinical symptoms of getting acutely ill after sex, but I mean, these are big concerns. And we know the spike can distribute to the testes and the sperm. And we do see reproductive impacts across the...
I'd like to point out what Arnie Burkhardt found again. And this is really important. He did autopsies on vaccinated people who died. And what he found was in observation of the testes in the subjects he did examine, and in terms of an autopsy, he could find zero sperm. Instead, wall-to-wall spike protein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can do the math. You understand. When there's an exchange of body fluids during sex, the male is going to be gifting the female with nothing but spike. And no wonder women are reporting within a half an hour, even minutes, they're feeling not right, burning sensation, pain, and they go into days and days of misery. Sometimes it lasts for indefinitely. So sex can ultimately kill.
Yep.
I don't think I'm going overboard, do you?
No, I can recall several incidents that I came across where, you know, one developed leukemia, young girl, unvaxxed. They were a newly married couple. He was vaxxed. And when they consummated their marriage, the next day she was bleeding horribly. And she ended up in the hospital and within a week or two was diagnosed with some kind of leukemia. And then there was the vivid ones really stick out. There was the mother whose boyfriend was vaxxed, and they had sex, and she felt it immediately, felt burning, and then her whole body, she said, felt like she had been poisoned with radiation. And whatever it was, she was passed on to her kids, and they got sick.
That's a frightfully horrible story. I remember it very clearly.
That was early on before, people really understood what these shots were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Here we go back.
The epidemiologic data. I mean, we have seen sudden drops in birth rates, infertility, increases in miscarriages, and so...
He's being polite. What we're seeing here is mass sterilization. This is a war on human reproduction. That's what these shots were designed to do. But he's being a diplomat. I understand that. But we don't have time for diplomacy anymore. We've got to deal with reality. These shots are sterilizing human beings and killing them. Period.
Yeah.
They're not a vaccine. They should never be referred to as a vaccine. Never.
Especially infertility. So I do think there is, this is where it gets really uncomfortable because, many people are vaccinated. And, we've seen the demonization of the unvaccinated, and I'm not interested in trying to, it's not that we're demonizing them, but I'm having difficulty with that one. I think there are potential risks. The thing that I would say is I wanted to say something a little bit more reassuring. And this is, I've said this answer to...
Before he gets there, is this a time for reassuring people that there's really not much to worry about? I think those days are long gone. People need facts.
I think there's a lot to worry about.
They need hard data. Their lives are literally in danger. Every time they go out, whether they're vaxxed or not, they're in danger. I understand what he's doing. That's very nice, but it's not the time for that anymore. We've got to get very serious about this, as serious as we possibly can get.
Different forms of this question. There's a lot of people are concerned, what did this vaccine do to me? And should I be worried of dropping dead? And this is kind of a tautological, but... I just tell people, the farther out you are from your last vaccine and you're okay, it's more likely you're going to be okay.
What do you think of that?
Maybe.
Lowercase m?
Yeah, lowercase m.
This is not a joke. Remember the Pfizer documents. 1,291 different forms of injury were discovered in their virtual non-existent trials. It was that bad. Whoever put this bioweapon together, in my view, is almost superhuman. It's that evil and that complicated. Too many different ways to... It's anti-life. And we think all mammals are potentially victims before this thing is over. We're getting lots of reports.
It sure looks that way.
Dogs and cats dying.
Yeah.
What do we have? The lions in the zoos dropping dead suddenly. A giraffe in another zoo. They give them shots. And then we have reports of zoo animals that didn't get shot that are sick. So...
handlers are shot
correct.
Up, and they're shedding this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. All right.
So I think we just really need to move away from these gene therapy vaccines. Enough of them. You know, preserve your health. You know, let's be clear, because I saw some of the questions in the chat of like, what can I do and whatnot. But I would say the iPrevent protocol that Paul and us put together, you know, for people who fear vaccine injury, that applies to people who are worried about shedding. I mean, those are all generally quite safe, often nutraceuticals. They have really good mechanisms. And, you know, I think that applies to this same, but we don't need a new protocol for shedding. I mean, I would just go to iPrevent.
I think the more new protocols to help people avoid shedding and deal with it, the better. Mask is one. You don't have to be in a pill bottle. There are a lot of things you can do. Physically distance. Now, I know that many of you work around the vaxxed and you cannot quit your jobs. We're not asking you to do that. We're not suggesting you quit your jobs. We're simply trying to give you the information to arm yourselves so you can minimize contact, if you so choose. It's your choice, at work with others. Stay clear as much as you can. Get outside, get in the fresh air as often as you can. It's a very difficult situation. But they, the controllers who are behind this, knew every bit of what's going on now and how it would happen. They knew. Nothing surprised them. This is really a masterwork of death. It's a weapon. That's all it is. All right. I don't know if we should... You want to jump over to some other material now?
One more interesting segment if you want to keep it going. We're almost
at
the end
anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yep.
Here we go. This is the FLCCC weekly update of November 1st. Dr. Pierre Corey is the primary here.
Including the nose sprays, but some people are asking. That help?
That's not on iPrevent. Nose sprays is more to protect against COVID. iPrevent is more things that would break down and counteract the effects of spike.
Okay. All right. Now, here's a question from Alan Apple, who says, I'm an extremely healthy 80-year-old, and I've been blindsided by serious osteoarthritis in both hips and knees. I did not get the vaccine, but my wife did, and she almost died from a stroke. Is there a chance she has shed on me, and that could have caused osteoarthritis?
I will say diffuse joint pain. So the way I would characterize that, because I can't be definitive on any of this, an 80-year-old with osteoarthritis, but if it's that number of joints, it sounds like something systemic. Number one, the way in which I think about shedding is that if shedding is real, it means that you're capable of developing symptoms that are typical for those who have suffered vaccine injuries, syndromes, or complications. And Scott, I think, would agree, we definitely see diffuse joint pains in our patient population that were temporarily associated to the vaccine. I mean, vaccine is dysregulated immune system. There's a lot of inflammation and there's a lot of things going on, but that is a typical symptom. So when the person asks, is it possible that this could be the cause? I can't exclude it, is how I would say it. It would fit with a vaccine injury that we have witnessed in the wake of vaccinated patients. And it's the way he says it, you know, this sudden onset at 80 without a history, and it's hips and knees. That's quite concerning.
He's still, as you can tell, walking around the object here, and the object is shedding. It should not be even up for discussion at this point. We've known about shedding for a long, long over 2 years. It's obvious it's being shed, no question. And I wish he'd be more direct, but I understand what he's doing. Anything you want to add here?
No, I agree. I agree.
All right, here we go.
This, huh? People are asking, can unvaccinated people get blood clots from shedding?
That was part of what I was stating earlier, is that, you know, 20% of the patients that we've sent blood samples on for amyloid fibrin microclotting, you know, these are not the what you would think of as a normal blood clot, right? These are smaller clots. They may be missing atom TS13, which is an enzyme that helps break them down.
That's exactly what we began the program talking about. Amyloid clots all over the place in the unvaxxed.
They have amyloid proteins in them. They're more tenacious. They're focused in the capillary beds. It's hard for the body to break them down with its own resources. And we have patients who are unvaccinated who've got 4 out of 4 amyloid fibrin microclotting, and we're treating them with anticoagulation therapy.
And the one thing I want to sort of help people understand what we're talking about is that, you know, prior to the vaccination campaign, two terms really didn't exist in medicine. One is turbo cancer, the other one's microclotting, in my opinion, as far as pathophysiologic understanding. So we never had the term turbo cancer in our nomenclature, and we never had the term microclotting. So what Scott's talking about is, because when people say, can I get a blood clot? If you're talking about the traditional definition, which I would say is large vein clots, right, or macro clots, which actually impede blood flow to large vessels, what Scott and I see and what's been described is aggregates of cells and fibrin and proteins, but they're tiny, but they're present in the circulation. And what they impact is the microcirculation. So they're not interrupting flow through the great veins. They're actually interrupting flow through actually the most important, which is the tiniest vessels, which are the capillaries. And so I guess the question was, could I get a clot from shedding? I think, Scott, I know your answer would be more confident than mine, but we do believe that we're seeing a pretty consistent prevalence of microclotting. Now, I wish we had Jordan on here.
Okay, we're running out of time here. I'd like to get to some of the readers we have. Maybe we can plug this in next time again. I got to find the exact part that you're looking for. We have five, six minutes left, that's all.
Okay.
Hey, what do you want to do here about the readers? You got some really good ones put together, very important. Which ones would you like to start with?
I'm just scrolling through the comments here on this particular
fatal
platform.
Shedding, that's always a crowd pleaser.
I just wanted to read a comment here. This is pertaining to the shedding here for this video. My friend is postmenopausal 9 years. She went shopping at a tiny store. A friendly employee and her started chatting, so they walked together over an hour and chatted. My friend began to cramp severely. They asked her if she had the shot, because that week all the employees got their shots and several had reactions. No, none. Soon, the pain became unbearable. She had to leave. By the time she got home, she was bleeding. She hasn't done that in 9 years. Cramping, bleeding, lessened over three days. It happened to her once again several months later after shopping. It has not happened again in over a year. Is she at the same risk as a vaxxed person?
Well,
maybe.
Okay.
You know, I can tell you there are unvaxxed people. I come across these reports all the time now, developing blood clots and requiring surgery. And then there was that one I sent you last week where Mm-hmm. This person went in for surgery to remove a clot in the leg. He was unvaxxed, and the surgery went sideways, and they ended up having to amputate his leg.
Yep. And then there was another one where the leg was left on, and it was had been cut open from the hip almost down to the ankle to get the clot out.
Unvaxxed.
So this is not good. All right, I got this that you just sent me. Interesting. Vaccine-injured poll, and they asked
people.
Yeah,
that was a poll in one of the vax-injured group, and
crazy.
Well, you tell them.
Question, do you guys think the vaccine, mistake number one, is really experimental? 63% said yes, 32% said no, and 5% undecided. So people still don't understand. Two-thirds of the people don't understand that it's not a vaccine and it's not experimental. It was designed, constructed, and deployed to do precisely what it's doing, and that's kill people. Quickly or more slowly. But the pathway seems generally, not always, to be quite clear once you've been either shed upon successfully, if that's the right word, the transmission, or you've been injected. Not good.
Yep.
Okay. We have 3 minutes.
Okay. You pick.
You always do that to me.
Well, I assemble them. You pick.
Jeez. All right. I can't resist fatal shedding. Let's see what
okay.
we got there. You find it?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Question to this person. This is in the shedding group. Were the people in your tent that you lost jabbed, or were they affected by shedding? One of each. My sister got it due to pressure at work. Mom died after spending time with a vax guy that she just spent time with his vaxed COVID-positive kids. They sent her home from the hospital to get worse. Then she got into the hospital, and they followed the script that we all hear about. My sister died of a heart attack at 52. She had been to two different checkups a month before she passed, and there was no indication that she was suffering from suddenly. I'm the only surviving member of my birth family. My dad passed 20 years ago from cancer. My mom and sister should both be here. Neither of them wanted this thing. My mom said she'd rather die of the alleged virus than get the vax. She actually yelled at her doc when he recommended the shot to her.
Well, mom was a hero, and mom died. These people
due to hospital protocols.
Exactly. They gave her, obviously, remdesivir, I would guess. Probably ended up putting her on a vent, which blew out her lungs. So they kill her. They kill people all the time. Her sister, mom's
heart
gone. This is tragic. Tragic.
Well, the sister got the vax because she was pressured to for her job. And she had a heart attack at 52.
Gone. Mom's gone. Sister's gone. These people were not injected. And look what happened to them.
Yeah.
All right, let's grab another one here. pick one. Booster Carnage?
Sure.
All right. Hi, everyone. My mom had the COVID booster last Saturday. That night, she suffered a heart attack caused by multiple blood clots. She is out of the hospital now. When they phoned for an ambulance, they were told that there was a delay because there had been a rush of people suffering from reactions to the booster shot. I am looking to take action. I have put in complaints to the hospital, Somerset public health officer, and the person in charge of the COVID vaccine administration in Somerset. It's maybe UK. I don't know. I have reported to the police, but it can't be taken further because someone needs to be charged with a crime. Can anyone send information, etc., with how to go about taking action, who can be charged, proof, etc.? Well, good luck.
Get in line.
Right. No. This is crazy. All right. One more. Here. Family strife. Right in the middle.
Okay.
Go to it.
How does everyone handle family members who are vaccinated? My daughter-in-laws are vaccinated, and they are so mad that they don't see their grandchildren, and they blame her. I can understand that they are upset, but on the other hand, we are trying to keep them safe. There are three adults vaccinated in the house. Therefore, my daughter is very careful about when and where they can see the kids, but it's now become hatred towards my daughter. How do you even handle this after a while?
Just imagine the holiday season coming up, and you're coming over for Thanksgiving, right? No, I'm afraid we're not going to make it. Why not? Well, you're vaxxed, and we're not, and I just don't want to put my husband and I and our kids at risk by coming over and sitting in close proximity to anyone who's been vaccinated. Click. That's it. There's strife, immeasurable strife, all over the social fabric of this country and other countries all around the world from this. Because when people realize that shedding is real, everything is off the table. It's gone.
Well, and a lot of these people have symptoms that they can't withstand, you know, even a few minutes with people who are vaxxed.
Understood.
Much less a couple hours.
I want to suggest again, if you really have a family that can communicate after that kind of a dilemma, that you do a Zoom call set up with a big screen, and each of you have a big screen of the other half of your family sitting around the table, and you can talk back and forth freely. You have to do a virtual sit-down family dinner. That's a possible way to resolve some of this. You have to protect the unvaxxed. And if most of the unvaxxed have the same kind of microclots we saw in the beginning of the program with the staining turning them a fluorescent green, and those are amyloid clots, not blood clots in the traditional sense. If that's true, and most of the unvaxxed now have microclots, we're in really big trouble.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, yep. It's bigger trouble than most people would want to even think about. Because,
yep.
Again, these microclots grow. They proliferate.
Well, they starve
in number, and they grow.
They're starving your vital organs of oxygen. Your
and
brain,
nutrition.
Your liver, your kidneys, heart,
right.
Everything's under stress when it doesn't have oxygen.
Exactly. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thank you. Great job, as always.
Okay,
not
Jeff.
Pleasant, but we wouldn't shirk our responsibility for a moment. This is what we're trying to do, is bring truth and reality out to everyone listening. Okay, good night.
Okay, good night, Jeff.
We'll be right back with more, another hour. Mitchell Henderson coming up next. Stay tuned for that. Hang on.